to those nations who would make themselves our adversary. We offer not a pledge, but a request that both sides begin anew the quest for peace. Before the dark powers of destruction, unleashed by science, engulf all humanity, so let us begin anew. Remembering on both sides that civility is not a sign of weakness, and sincerity is always subject to proof. Let us never negotiate out of fear, but let us never fear to negotiate.
The language of the President in his inaugural address now seems almost prophetic as he prepares to leave for conferences overseas. As we are speaking, it is only half an hour before his departure time from Idlewild Airport. In fact, we have just learned that the President has now arrived at Idlewild and is ready to leave. This is Leon Pearson. NBC News is presenting a special series of reports entitled The President in Europe. Tonight, May 30th, the first of the series, Advance Report. In this and in other reports during the period of the trip, we shall hear from the full staff of NBC correspondents in Paris, Vienna, and London. Someone had said to Senator John F. Kennedy a year ago that on this date in 1961 he would be taking off for conferences in Europe, including a meeting with the mercurial and provocative premier of the Soviet Union, he would have disbelieved it. For one thing, the summit meeting in Paris of 1960 had just collapsed in a sensational failure. For another, he had grave reservations about summit meetings in general, and he said so during the campaign. Further, the man who was to become his Secretary of State, Dean Rusk, was saying just a year ago, and this is a quotation, "Such experiences as we have had with summit diplomacy do not encourage the view that it contributes to the advancement of American interests." But since Mr. Kennedy took office, he has come to believe that a meeting, not for negotiation, but for clarification, might be useful. In fact, and this would seem to be the genesis of the coming encounter, he suggested in a letter to Chairman Khrushchev, delivered personally by U.S. Ambassador Thompson, that a meeting be held. He got a favorable response, and the rest we all know, that the President suggested a date which would tie in with his trip to Paris. Well, this has had the rather unhappy result of making Paris a way station to Vienna. For a French view of the President's trip, we turn to NBC's Sander Van Oker in Paris.
President Kennedy originally wanted his visit to French President de Gaulle to be a singularly grand gesture. It may now seem to de Gaulle to be merely a stopover on the way to Vienna. No French official is saying this publicly, but that's the feeling here nevertheless. President Kennedy decided immediately after he assumed office to go to Paris to see de Gaulle. Some of his advisors cautioned against it. They reminded him about all the things he had said during the campaign about the dangers of personal diplomacy. He was not impressed. The president was determined to see de Gaulle for one simple reason. The French president is the most towering figure in Western Europe. He has decided views about his own and France's place in history. He has never been happy with what he felt was an Anglo-American directorate over Western policy. He did not like it under Churchill and Roosevelt. He liked it even less under Macmillan and Eisenhower. Mr. Kennedy did not expect he could change de Gaulle's mind. He knew he could not agree to de Gaulle's demands for control of American nuclear weapons on French soil. Nor could he satisfy completely de Gaulle's insistence that France, Britain, and the U.S. work out a coordinated worldwide policy. He decided that he could at least listen to de Gaulle, which is, after all, what de Gaulle really thinks people should do, and also agree to consult more with France than we have in the past. After all, Mr. Kennedy believed that de Gaulle would be flattered by being the only Western European leader the American president had come to see. Macmillan and Adenauer had come to Washington to see President Kennedy, but he was coming to Paris to see de Gaulle. Now, that's merely a good idea fallen to the ground. The president has decided, for what he believes are good and compelling reasons, to go on to Vienna to see Khrushchev, then stop off in London to see British Prime Minister Macmillan. So the original purpose of the de Gaulle trip has been somewhat diluted, and this has not been lost upon President de Gaulle. This is Sander Van Oker, NBC White House correspondent in Paris.
On the surface, it looks as if the young President of the United States will be no match for the veteran statesman who is President of France. But the balance becomes more even if you make an equation, something like this. Kennedy plus the USA equals de Gaulle plus France. Edwin Newman, until recently, was NBC bureau chief in Paris. He knows the figure of President de Gaulle.
Charles de Gaulle, President Kennedy is meeting the most remarkable statesman now active on the world scene. There are many keys to de Gaulle's personality. The most important is his dedication to France. A France that ever since he was a boy, he has pictured as the princess in the fairy tales or the Madonna in the frescoes. Those phrases, by the way, are not literary inventions. De Gaulle has used them himself in his books. Having pictured France as the fairy princess, de Gaulle dreamed of being her savior, and he has been, twice. That gives him an inner certainty about himself and about what he is doing. For a variety of reasons, it also makes him harder to deal with. It gives him a distinctly mystical quality. It leads him to run what is essentially a one-man government. And finally, it robs him of what might be called follow-through. His rightness and his mission to embody and unify France are so obvious to de Gaulle that he thinks they should be equally obvious to everybody else. So he often substitutes exhortation for action. In person, de Gaulle is a man of meticulous courtesy and, when he wants to apply it, much graciousness and charm. His manner is monarchical, his dignity is unassailable, but he has a wry sense of humor and he's perfectly capable of a personal gesture. Like President Kennedy, de Gaulle is a student of the art of governing and leadership. And though an entire generation lies between them, their meeting is likely to be fascinating to others and to the two men themselves. Edwin Newman, NBC News, Paris.
Now for the substance of things. We do not have to be inside the Élysée Palace to know what these two presidents will talk about. They will talk about the problems that have been boiling up between us for the past 2 years. John Rich, NBC Paris bureau chief, knows the story. It's already past midnight in Paris, but here's Rich.
One French newspaper is referring to this as the week of President Kennedy's two summit meetings, one with Khrushchev and the other one with Charles de Gaulle. In French eyes, tomorrow's meeting finds a young, untried American president coming to Paris to seek advice and counsel from a wise, experienced general, the conscience of France, and the spokesman for Western Europe. There was a time not so long ago when France was extremely anxious to get nuclear information and assistance from the United States. Today's French attitude is indicated in the statement the French defense minister made a few weeks ago. He said, "We're not asking anything from anyone. We're going right ahead developing our own atomic bomb." Since then, France has exploded its fourth atomic device, and it appears about to have a bomb small enough to be carried in an airplane. It's this insistence of de Gaulle to have his own nuclear capability, this plunging ahead on his own, disregarding the rest of NATO, that troubles Western policymakers. He has pulled his fleet and much of his army out of NATO. He refuses adamantly to permit American nuclear bombs and warheads to be stored on French soil unless he has a say about their use. His price is a three-power directorate of the United States, Britain, and France to plan global strategy for the West. De Gaulle will undoubtedly be ready to give advice to President Kennedy if Kennedy will take it. De Gaulle is especially uneasy about the Vienna meeting with Khrushchev. He feels that Kennedy is going there at a bad time, psychologically bad for him after Cuba and Laos, and too soon for him to have thought through all the problems he must face. De Gaulle can be expected to warn Kennedy against any spur-of-the-moment deals with Khrushchev before Kennedy has had a chance to consult his principal Western powers, meaning de Gaulle. On Berlin, the two men may find themselves closest in accord. The French position on Berlin has not changed. De Gaulle feels there is no Berlin problem, that the Soviets won't dare act as long as the West stands completely firm. Those who think the de Gaulle-Kennedy meeting will be successful avoid specifics about it. The most they seem to hope for is that the two men will get to know one another better and to lay the basis for future meetings. President Kennedy is unlikely to be able to budge de Gaulle from any of his convictions in 3 days or 3 weeks. This is John Rich, NBC News, Paris.
I gather that the pessimism about the meetings is not a matter of deep concern to the public in France. They have a broader interest, not to say excitement, regarding the person of our young president and his wife. We have asked a knowledgeable French lady, Madame Marie Laruelle, to report her own impressions under Paris skies.
Well, I think the French people, of course, will be very pleased to see the President and Mrs. Kennedy face to face. Newspapers and magazines already have brought us their picture, and we found them so good-looking and full of life that it was refreshing to see them. It made you feel good. They are the genuine representatives of the young American Republic that we remember Walt Whitman has celebrated in his Leaves of Grass. General de Gaulle certainly will be very pleasant to the Kennedys, but I'm afraid de Gaulle is likely to regard the president as a very young man and merely go on thinking about the world as he wishes. After all, one is nearly at the end of his term of life and the other has a long career in front of him, and they can't have the same outlook on life. Meantime, Paris is very excited. For one thing, the French people of our generation all remember the arrival of the American armies in Paris, and this visit for us recalls that day. This is Marie Laruelle in Paris.
Yes, they remember the liberation. There never has been such a period of goodwill for Americans. The French were so eager to see the liberating Yankees, they lined the Champs-Élysées from curb line to building line. And if you know that avenue, you know how broad it is. They even rented stepladders so they could stand higher to see the GIs marching by. General de Gaulle, in his memoirs, speaks of the liberation as this almost supernatural event, dreamed of so long and so fervently. One stroke, he says, the people were released from that psychology of silence into which the constraints of 4 years of silence had plunged them. But that was 1944, nearly 17 years ago. Our popularity has not sustained itself over much of that time. But now, once more, the American flags are out in the streets of Paris. Here's the picture from John Rich.
American flags have sprouted on the streets. In the shop windows, pictures of John Kennedy have replaced those of the last visitor, Belgium's King Baudouin. Paris is as ready as it's ever going to be for the arrival later this morning of President and Mrs. Kennedy. This city, always beautiful, promises to have good weather for the start of the three-day visit. The sky is clear, the temperature just about perfect for sitting in the outdoor cafes or strolling through the parks. Everything is set for 3 days of pomp and pageantry such as only the French can produce. There's a great curiosity among Frenchmen about the new American president and his wife. Column after column have been published in French newspapers about Jacqueline Kennedy's wardrobe and her hairdo. Her picture is on the cover of most of this week's French magazines. No matter what happens in the conference room between the two presidents, the reception by the French people promises to be warm and cordial. But French security authorities aren't taking any chances. Paris these days also has another, less pleasant face. Peace talks with the Algerian rebels are now going on, and the extreme right is showing its opposition by indiscriminately setting off plastic bombs all over the city. Two of France's top generals are on trial today for leading last month's Algerian insurrection, and they may be sentenced later, while Kennedy is here. Outwardly appearing calm, parts of this city are extremely tense. More than 10,000 police and firemen will be on duty in Paris during the Kennedy visit, watching the rooftops and even the sewers under the city. This is John Rich, NBC News, Paris.
Clearly, there are two different evaluations to be made of the presidential trip about to begin. One in terms of political understanding, the other in terms of popular reception. Sander Van Oker, who covers the White House, but who is now in Paris, is alert to both.
Perry Match, France's leading magazine, is out on the streets. The cover picture, Jacqueline Kennedy. The caption, Jacqueline Kennedy rediscovers France. The word is significant. The French are already claiming her as their own, and in a sense she is. Her ancestors were French. In a larger sense, however, this feeling extends to her husband, whose ancestors were Irish. The Kennedys seem to belong to all who wish to claim them. Reporters first noticed this phenomenon in Canada on the Kennedys' recent visit. More people turned out to see them in Ottawa than had come out to see Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip. There's obviously more interest here this week in the President and the First Lady in the human interest sense than there is in what transpires in the talks between Mr. Kennedy and President de Gaulle. The Kennedys, whether they like it or not, have become international status symbols. People find in them the attributes they would like to find, and often don't, in themselves. Position, beauty, brains, wealth, education, and good breeding. Europeans are somewhat astonished and more than a little pleased to find them in two Americans, for they assume that these are qualities usually reserved for Europeans. They are becoming more generous, however. They are now willing to see these qualities exported. The enthusiasm the Kennedys will generate among the French is not going to change the basic problems between France and the U.S., but it will have some value. At the turn of the century, Edward VII came from Britain to Paris on a visit. Relations between the two countries could hardly have been worse. Yet in a few days, a new mood existed. It laid the foundation for the Entente Cordiale, which has lasted more or less through two world wars. Edward did little in a substantive way to bring this about. He changed the mood of France by sheer graciousness. The French acclaimed him, not for what he did, but for what he seemed to be. They are likely to react in much the same way this week to the Kennedys. President de Gaulle, however, is not likely to be impressed in the same way. International status symbols don't impress him. He's been one too long to be impressed by other newer arrivals on the scene. Sandra Van Ocker, NBC, White House correspondent in Paris.
I suppose it was this attitude of General de Gaulle, that is, regarding himself as a symbol identified with the Cross of Lorraine, which led Prime Minister Churchill during the war to make the quip to President Roosevelt, "The Cross of Lorraine is the heaviest cross I have to bear." But when President de Gaulle visited the United States less than 2 years ago, he was not unbending, almost warm. Of course, he could never unbend in the clownish way of Nikita Khrushchev. For a report on Soviet views of the conference, here is our Moscow correspondent, John Chancellor, now in Vienna.
What the Russians have not said about the president's trip to Paris is nearly as interesting as what they have said. About the only mention so far in Moscow of the Paris meeting was a suggestion in the Russian press that critics in America were wrong when they hinted that Kennedy, Khrushchev in Vienna will diminish the importance of Kennedy, de Gaulle in Paris. In the Russian view at this time, all talking is worthwhile. Therefore, the Soviet propaganda machine has refrained from its usual preoccupation with the splits in NATO as characterized by Charles de Gaulle. The Russians have not spoken on the major topic of France's nuclear ambitions, at least recently, and they have stopped temporarily rubbing propaganda salt in France's Algerian wound. One interesting aspect of the recent treatment of France in the Soviet press is that the Russians have been passing up potential material for anti-Western propaganda. The trial of the insurgent leader Maurice Schall is one good example. The Russians are, of course, vitally interested in what takes place in Paris, with particular interest in the tough and uncompromising position of the French on Berlin. But when a story appeared in Paris this week outlining the details of France's determination to fight, if necessary, for Berlin, the Russians didn't rise to the bait. Perhaps they will before Kennedy and Khrushchev meet. But the best guess now is that the Russians won't comment on Paris, for fear of spoiling Vienna. This is John Chancellor of NBC News Moscow reporting from Vienna.
Ray Shearer, NBC White House correspondent, sees the voyage as a whole, with more emphasis on Vienna than on Paris. And he gives the Washington appraisal now, somewhat skeptical, of what may be expected from the encounter of Messrs. K and K.
Tonight, John F. Kennedy, one day past his 44th birthday, is flying to Europe to present himself to two older and somewhat enigmatic men, Charles de Gaulle and Nikita Khrushchev. In previous times, when a president has gone off someplace to meet with Mr. Khrushchev, the mood of Washington has been described as one of cautious optimism. Tonight, there is very little optimism. There is a good deal of caution. With Mr. Khrushchev in an ebullient frame of mind, no one is talking this time about ending the Cold War. The best that can be said for the Vienna meeting is that in face-to-face discussion, the two Ks, Kennedy and Khrushchev, may be able to get across to each other impressions about their personal intentions, which they cannot communicate convincingly in any other way. Or, as one old Russian hand here was explaining to some correspondents, the Russians lather everything they say up with such a thick coating of propaganda, you never know what they really mean, what they really want, what is propaganda and what is fact. In private, he said, they sometimes speak the truth. There is always the possibility Nikita Khrushchev will speak the truth to John F. Kennedy. If he does, and the truth is harsh, Mr. Kennedy may come back from Vienna with some real impetus for stirring this complacent country out of its comfortable doldrums. Of substantive issues, there are many to talk about. The Russian insistence on a three-power formula for every international organization, Berlin, nuclear testing, and so on. These things will be discussed, but they will not be resolved. The mood the president comes away from Vienna with, the measure of Mr. Khrushchev, that may be more important in the long run. Ray Scherer, NBC White House correspondent.
Only tonight in his address here in New York, the president said he would sing the same song that Vice President Johnson took on his recent trip and that Ambassador Adlai Stevenson will take on his to South America. The refrain is, he said, this country wants peace, this country wants freedom. It seems a very sound tactic for the White House to have insisted that the summit meeting will not be a meeting for negotiation in a formal sense, and that no treaties or state agreements will be entered into. This is disarming. It permits the president to come home empty-handed, in effect. It warns the public not to expect miracles. Probably the most we can expect is that the two world leaders will achieve the kind of candor which, as Ray Scherer suggests, can cut through propaganda. For example, it might be useful from Khrushchev's point of view to explain to Mr. Kennedy what a painful thing Berlin is to the communist world, providing an escape route for thousands upon thousands of East Germans from behind the Iron Curtain to the West, bleeding that country of its best workers, its best talents. And it might be useful for the president to say, in complete privacy, with eye-to-eye directness, that the United States intends to stand firm in Berlin, and there should be no misunderstanding about that. A diplomat once expressed to me in very undiplomatic language the essence of a diplomat's purpose. He said, you've got to meet the opposition and find out what's eating him. President Kennedy put it in a more statesmanlike way on the 20th of January when he said,
let us never negotiate out of fear, but let us never fear to negotiate.
By tomorrow morning, before most of us are awake, President Kennedy's plane will be over Paris. There he will be received by President de Gaulle, who sees his country and himself in these terms. And I quote from the closing lines of his memoirs. Old France, weighed down with history, prostrated by wars and revolutions, endlessly vacillating from greatness to decline, but revived century after century by the genius of renewal. I'm still quoting. Old man, exhausted by ordeal, detached from human deeds, feeling the approach of the eternal cold, but always watching in the shadows for the gleam of hope. For us Americans, perhaps, the gleam of hope lies in youth and in the great emotional interest of other peoples in our country and our leaders, a country which no longer waits for world events to overtake it, but which has stepped forward as a leader of the world. This is Leon Pearson, NBC News.
This special report on the President in Europe was the first of a series that will be broadcast each night this week on the NBC radio network. NBC News will cover President Kennedy's trip to Paris, Vienna, and London with a corps of 60 correspondents, editors, cameramen, and technicians. This program was produced by NBC News. Producers were Art Wakely and Ray Hassan. Director, Daniel Sutter. This is the NBC radio network.